right, Mike Johnson will join us here in a moment. The Leafs making a deal over the weekend. Jared McCann coming in for the prospect that they got in the Kapanen deal originally and a seventh-round pick. And then McCann is exposed because they protected the big four up front, which he knew was coming, and the four defensemen in the back, which is what I've been expecting the whole time, that they would protect Justin Hall. And it's Hall, Muzzin, Brody, Riley, and their goalie. You know, it's pretty much what I expected to happen. But McCann is now available, and I don't know if he'll get picked or not. I would think Kerfoot or Dermott, more than likely. But it's an interesting move that they give up on a prospect and give up on another pick, and they're all in. They're going for it, but they're dealing with a system right now. I talked about it a lot last week. This is a team, like a system, that looks like a team that won a cup or went for cup runs multiple times, and now they're dealing with the aftermath. Meanwhile, the Leafs have not won a playoff round in 17 years.
And that's the difficult thing, Brian. I touched on it this morning. When you look at the four teams that played for the Stanley Cup this year that were left, okay, Montreal was a one-off. There always is a one-off. But, you know, the majority of their team has been together, especially when you're led by Carey Price. But those other three teams, you talk about Vegas, Islanders, and Tampa, the majority of those guys have played together for years. And so what the Maple Leafs are doing year after year, you know, bringing in seven or eight new guys, it seems like, every year to round out this roster, do you really have faith that that could be a path to success?
Well, it hasn't been for them in the past.
It hasn't been, but in a flat cap world, it becomes even more difficult.
Let's bring in our TSN hockey analyst joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here's Mike Johnson. What do you make of where the Leafs are at with the McCann deal and moving into the expansion, who they protected, and how this might play out?
Well, I think I'm not surprised they protected Justin Hall, but if you're asking me what I would do, I would not have. I would have exposed,
really?
I would have protected three, and I would expose Dermott and Hall and say, okay, listen, you can take one or the other, and maybe I have more faith in Travis Dermott than most do, but you pair him with Jake Muzzin, and Muzzin is such a guy who can carry his partner and really make them solid that, okay, so we have five defensemen, we'll protect three, you'll take one, we're going to have a top four at the end of the day anyways, and I would have protected seven forwards. I mean, if you're going to be built to score and be built to have three lines, I would have put Kerfoot and McCann, who I really like, on the protected list and go forward like that. I think what the Leafs were thinking were, well, we want the big four defensemen, we have the big four forwards, and then we basically have a Kerfoot replacement in McCann if Kerfoot gets claimed. Like, I think they had to proactively go out and get a replacement for the guy that they are anticipating losing. And McCann can play center, he can play wing, he can play, you know, middle six role, very much like Kerfoot does. He can kill penalties. He's an efficient little offensive player. So I get what they're doing. I would have done it differently. I just think Justin Hall, at his age, I know he's got a good value contract, but at his age, I would have exposed him and taken my chances saying, take one of those two defensemen and we'll be okay. Our lineup will look pretty good, more like the way we want it to, if you only lost a defenseman as opposed to maybe one of those forwards.
Yeah, Johnny, I sort of had the confused look on my face when you said you would have left Justin Hall and protected, because I just look at his value at $2 million, a right-handed shot defenseman, something this team has been starving for over the last decade. You got him on the cheap. He played pretty well. He's a guy you could trust in your top four. I just think there was too much risk there, because if you lose him, how do you replace him?
You replace him with Travis Dermott. I mean, you look at his numbers. Like, I know people get excited about Travis Dermott and maybe what he can't do, but like, his underlying defensive metrics have been really good. And third pair or second pair, you look at the numbers down the line, he can do, I think, with Jake Muzzin, something really close to what Justin Hall can do. So that's just where we differ. And I get that the Leafs, more than anything right now, need guys who outplay the value of their contract.
Yes.
And Justin Hall at $2 million certainly will do that. But so will Travis Dermott. What does he make? Like one and a half, 1.8 or something?
Yeah,
so,
1.5. He just signed a 2-year deal.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, he would do the same if given that role. I believe he can. Obviously, the organization is not as bullish on him as I am because they clearly, he's fallen out of favor at different times and his roles get scaled back. And but that's the logic behind me. I think if you put him with Muzzin, they could produce pretty similar results as Justin Hall.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different things that become clear here in terms of the way that they approached it. One, they are high on Justin Hall. I think the head coach is the one that's high on Justin Hall. I think he's liked him for a long time with the Marlies. He's liked him up here. He gave him the opportunity. He's flourished. I think they see Dermott as a guy that might get blown past by Sandin anyway. You know, so if he's on the third pairing, they probably want Sandin playing maybe over Dermott. But I think it says a couple things. One, they have no faith in building on the right side. So anyone who thinks Timothy Liljegren is still a guy that they have plans for, stop it, because they don't. I don't think they see him as an NHL player. I don't think, because if he was, he'd be here by now. He'd be an option. Yep. He'd be a guy you'd be hearing about. He never comes up. He never got a chance at any point. Now, they were remarkably healthy last year, but he still never played. And I also think it might be also another example of them looking at the four forwards and saying, I don't care who else is on this team, you better do it. Like, if Kerfoot gets plucked, okay, I don't care. You four better smarten up and play better. And not just in the regular season, which we all expect, in the playoffs. And I could see it being like almost a spiteful move. Like, we're not saving McCann and Kerfoot for you. You four, you better figure it out on your own. See you later.
We're not giving you any extra support.
Nothing.
No supplementary offense. No depth scoring. You guys want all the money. You want all the no protection clauses. You go figure it out. And I heard Carlo talking about, you know, when you change over so many players, is that the right recipe? Well, I think that's the reality. When you have that many guys, if you have those four forwards make that much money, the parts that are around them become interchangeable because they're all virtually million-dollar players who will come and go based on their success. And so it's like they're tripling, not even doubling down now, right? Are they tripling down? Are they quadrupling down? Whatever the version is for this group of four forwards and the way this team is constructed, they're going back to the well again. They believe that they can get it done in the playoffs, not just the regular season, because they've all shown they can do it in the regular season. I mean, at the very highest level, but they can get it done in the playoffs as well. Time will tell. I would not have done it the same way, although I understand, Brian, you're right with your interpretation of what their moves likely mean and how they view their organization.
Johnny, help us understand the Jared McCann acquisition. You said you really like him, but there's a bigger fish out there that the Maple Leafs have to try to sign in Zach Hyman. And everybody thought that maybe Alex Kerfoot's salary, if it was removed from the team, would help supplement the difference in paying Zach Hyman to stay here. So how does the math work now? And tell us, if Jared McCann is a piece that stays because Kerfoot gets claimed, what can we expect out of him?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Carlo, for sure. But I think what it tells you is that Zach Hyman wanted a ton of money and a ton of term, right? Like, I think that's what it tells you. You'd be pretty sure Zach wasn't coming in at 4.25. He wants 7 or 8 years at 5.5 or more. And that's too much for Toronto. So I think they're making arrangements to let him go because they've had those conversations. So, I mean, you could say, well, Kerfoot leaves, then you can sign Zach Hyman. Someone has to play in the middle, even if it's the third line. Someone still has to play in the middle, and I think there is value there. I think the Leafs feel that they can get something similar to Zach Hyman. Maybe not as good, maybe not as perfect a fit, not a hometown guy, not a guy that everyone certainly loves as a player, but something similar as far as production and role for way less money, and in today's NHL, way less money is as important as how good they are on the ice. So I think it tells you Zach wanted a lot and he wasn't really willing to come down for any hometown discount, nor should he. That's a conversation for another day. What should we expect of Jared McCann? He drives offense. Like, he creates shots, creates chances, plays in the offensive zone. I don't think he scores at a 30-goal pace and a 60-point pace like he did this past year. Shooting percentage through the roof, his, you know, conversion rates for his line mates were a little bit higher than they should be. But as a consistent, as a middle six guy who can play wing or center, not going to hurt you defensively, tilts the ice the other way. And, oh, yeah, where did he play before he got to the NHL? Didn't he play in Sault Ste. Marie? I think there's a connection to Sault Ste. Marie there and a comfort with Kyle Dubas and the players that he likes. But I like him. I think he's a guy that he gets lost in Pittsburgh because there's Gino and there's Sid, and he's just kind of one of the guys. But he's a smart, effective player. The kind of player the Leafs would like, the kind of player that would probably do pretty well in the Leafs system.
With Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, another guy from the Sioux would be Ron Francis, who's running the operation in Seattle. So put your Ron Francis hat on, Johnny, and you wake up yesterday, I guess it was, or a couple of days ago, and you realize Carey Price is available. He's been exposed. You can have him. You don't have to pay anything for him other than the contract, and he's a member of the Seattle Kraken. Are you taking Carey Price from Montreal? If so, why? If not, why not?
I would not take him, and I said this before I even knew he had a bad knee or hip. I mean, forget about that little wrench he threw in the plan. It seems like everyone who's important on Montreal has a litany of surgeries they got to do before the expansion draft. But 33 years old, $10.5 million. He's got some injury history on his body, which is a little bit different than Marc-Andre Fleury, which everybody wants to compare him to and what Fleury did in Vegas. Fleury's been really quite healthy throughout most of his career. Hips, knees are tough for goalies, especially one like Carey Price. I would be terrified of that contract aging out not well. I would, if I'm Ron Francis, I am holding on to my cap space like my life depends on it. And I'm not giving up. I'm not taking Tarasenko. I'm not going to spend a ton of money because cap space is what you will be able to use to make your team better long term. Yeah. And I don't believe that Seattle, they can put a pretty good team on there. They might luck out because that, I think the Pacific Division is going to be pretty weak next year. But like, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to do what Vegas did. I was wrong about Vegas for sure, but I don't think Seattle should plan to think, well, we can go get Carey Price. We can go get, you know, Tarasenko, we can go get Jordan Eberle, and we'll be like Vegas, and we'll make the finals our first year. I don't think that's a wise way for them to plan their team. So I would not take Carey Price. There are other good bullies available for less money, less term, who will age out better, who have played, not for their entire career, but in the last 3 years, as well or better than Carey Price. And I would go in those directions. It looks like they're going to sign Driedger, who's been really good for the last 2 years. There are other guys out there. Kakinen's a good young goalie. I wouldn't feel compelled at all to go there. So maybe Montreal gets their wish. Or maybe constantly Mark Bergevin's like, you know what, if we lose him, Jake Allen's pretty good. We got $10.5 million more to round out our roster, and we don't have to worry about him turning 36, 37, 38, making that much money on a cap that's not going to go anywhere in the next 4 or 5 years significantly. So I think Berge is, you know, they'll spin it like they want him back and it was all part of a plan to protect the goaltending duo. But it's not, because if you're going to protect, if you're going to work out some sort of side deal or work it out so you have both goalies, you put Jake Allen on the exposed list and you protect Carey Price and you work out some sort of deal to not take Jake Allen. It doesn't really make sense that they would do that just to keep Jake Allen as their backup. So it tells me that Burge is okay with him leaving. Also tells me Carey Price is okay leaving, because he signed off on this knowing that he might go to Seattle. So interesting, given where they just were 2 weeks ago in the Stanley Cup final, in large part because Carey Price played so well. But if I'm Ron Francis, I'm not taking him.
I think that point needs to be explored more and likely will be in Montreal. When Price, if he doesn't get claimed and he comes back first day of camp, I ask, why'd you waive unless you were willing to go to Seattle? Like, what? Like, there's some amateur psychology there. Like, why would you waive if you weren't thinking maybe it'd be cool to be in Seattle instead of Montreal? Like, what, he's got to answer for that.
And he might say, well, I wanted Jake Allen, and I didn't think my contract would be claimed, and he could come off as magnanimous, like, you know, a good team guy. Mm-hmm. But I don't really buy it. Like, as great a team guy as you are, you're the starter. It's your life. It's your team. Mm-hmm. If you want to stay in Montreal for your career, then you're like, dude, I'm playing 60 games anyways. Like, we'll get another backup. Caden Primo can back me up 23 games. Like, I'm not putting my future of my family and where we live and where we raise our kids and all that stuff up for grabs for chance to be a good dude. So I don't know if we'll ever get to the bottom of it, but it is interesting to try to understand, you know, the mindset of both parties in making this decision.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun week, and beyond that, I mean, we're a week and a half away from free agency, too. It's going to be awesome. Good stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, boys. Have a good day.
You got it. There is Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Don't be nervous having your trade-in appraised. Maple Toyota makes it easy, offering the maximum value for your vehicle. Get your no-obligation appraisal today, MapleToyota.com.